You probably know Annie Leibovitz as the celebrity portraitist, shooting everybody from Tom Cruise to the Queen of England. Glamorous, arresting, often highly stylized portraits. Fortunately, Leibovitz has been able to keep the rights to her work despite some recent major financial problems. And she's just received some more good news. In recognition of her 40-year career, the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum has chosen her as its 2010 Woman of Distinction. Last year, I went to visit her at her headquarters in Greenwich Village to discuss the book At Work, which is a collection of her most memorable photographs. She surprised me by pulling out pictures from her archive of me, taken 20 years ago.
So this one was the first time I met you, and it was me and my Spy magazine co-founders. Boy, we were young.
Boy, very handsome.
That's nice.
This
picture of us from the back, yeah.
I think that's It has a kind of bathroom quality, don't you think?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you look so sweet in here. What happened, Dirt?
The pretext for our conversation is this new book called At Work, which is the stories behind your work. I remember and loved seeing again these pictures you did of the writer Robert Penn Warren. You, as you describe in the book, do lots of research about the mm-hmm. people you're going to shoot before you ever meet them.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like I try to find out as much information as I can until I think I find what I want to develop into a photograph.
Well, let's look at these. There's the picture of him sitting, looking like a lot of old guys, except here, not old guys that you see of incredible stature, because you've gotten him to take his shirt off.
It's so strange because it's not as if there was a sexual connotation to it. It was definitely he'd been writing about death, and I actually went to his house two times. The first time I went, I photographed him sitting at his desk, sitting in a tree reading. You know,
kind of normal writer,
very normal. You know, and I left thinking, you know, I'm missing it. There's something here. And I asked to come back, and as I drove up the drive, he was standing in his bedroom window, looking out the window at me as I drove up, and I just turned to my sister and I said, "Take the light and put it right in that room." And we went up there, and it was just the bed in the room, and I had him sit down, and it was more like peeling back layers to get to, you know, his ribs or his heart or, you know, I mean, you know, on some level, I'm not too sure. You know, I understood what I was doing. It was almost as if in a still photograph, to get to that kind of intimacy, you had to strip him back, you know.
Well, and especially, I mean, it's one thing, you know, a Whoopi Goldberg or a Cate Blanchett who was used to performing in outrageous ways. This guy presumably wasn't. How did he respond to this?
You know, he was very much, I mean, it was towards the end of his life, and he was very much at peace with himself and very, very comfortable and very much relaxed. And, like, he just seemed to be in a different place than the rest of us, you know. He must on some level been, I mean, I wish now I could go back, you know, being, you know, older and I can't exactly say wiser, but older, and I wish I could go back and talk to him about it now. But
he's gone 28 years ago, yeah.
But this is an important chapter in the book because, you know, it also has, you know, Bette Midler and Steve Martin, the Blues Brothers. It was that period, the very late 70s, early 80s, when I started to, you know, do this highly conceptual work. And Whoopi Goldberg,
which defined your style at a certain moment.
Yes, it was, you know, for that moment.
Right.
And inevitably, the first thing my subject would say is, "What do you want me to do?" Okay, well, first it was like lean against the wall or sit down over there or, you know. And then after a while, you know, I needed to make it a better, more interesting experience.
To have zanier concepts.
I don't know. Zany's...
Some of them.
Zany's a tough word. I mean,
I don't mean that disparagingly, but here is Whoopi Goldberg in a...
And what does Whoopi Goldberg do? What does she do? She's a comedian.
She
I mean,
is.
She's... Some of the more crazy ones, right. As we say, or zany, are really done with comedians. And, you know, I do some of my best work with people who can project. May not necessarily like to be photographed, but are comfortable performing. You know, at a certain point, you know, I had to learn to direct. You know, at the heart of my work is this struggle between the setup picture and the non-setup picture.
I mean, it does make for almost a textbook of what photography can do, because the range of things from this kind of Whoopi Goldberg in a tub full of milk to Robert Penn Warren sadly near death with his shirt off, there's a range of emotional tonality of look of you don't do just one thing, and photography doesn't do just
one thing. I appreciate that. I mean, that is, again, it's a primer for a young photographer. But
you say this is a book for young photographers. Among the pictures taken when you were a young photographer is this one when you went out on tour with the Rolling Stones in 1975. This fantastic picture of Mick Jagger looking incredibly bedraggled. Maybe he'd washed his hair. He's in a bathrobe. He has a towel on his head. He's in an elevator. As unglamorous and unrock starry as you can imagine.
I think that's kind of glamorous.
Well, he's Mick Jagger, so it's glamorous.
You know, it was interesting, of course, is when I finally, did look at the work from that tour. You know, it took me years to finally go back and look at it.
It was kind of a traumatic moment.
It was traumatic, you know, and I really wanted to try to portray the time as being, what it was, which was, you know, it had some danger to it, and it was, and it was hard. Interestingly enough, it still came out romantic. You couldn't take the romance out of it, no matter what you did. So you're saying, oh, he looks bedraggled, but I'm thinking it was right after a performance, and
it's real.
Lying.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something surreal about it, and he's going up in this elevator, and it's this modern elevator, and it just looks like it's going to keep going up.
And if you hadn't
gonna stop,
if you hadn't had this relationship built by being he wanted you to be his Cartier-Bresson, by being his tour photographer, would this picture have presented itself as an opportunity? Did you need the relationship?
Never. No, I mean, it was the end of the tour. I'd been on the road for about 3 weeks, and, there's a funny story at the beginning where, I was so naive and ignorant when I went on that tour. I brought my tennis racket along with me, thinking, because I looked at the roster of hotels that they were staying, and I thought these are really good hotels. Maybe I could set up an appointment with a pro, and brush up on my tennis, of course, after the first concert, I never saw the light of day again. So.
Yeah, you really weren't a rock and roll person if you thought you were going to play tennis on the Rolling Stones tour, huh?
That's true. It's true. I know. The years at Rolling Stone, I didn't really understand how music was made. There was this misconception, working at Rolling Stone that you were a rock and roll photographer. But I, coming from the Art Institute where I was schooled in,
in San
Robert
Francisco.
Frank, Cartier was on. Yeah, exactly. And so, I try to, anytime I talk about my work, I try to steer it back to the photography because that's actually what
I'm supposed to the celebrities in the rock and roll.
Yeah, I've had, I've been so lucky to, travel the road that I've been on, but it's really been in the interest of taking photographs.
Again, one of the pictures that you talk about in this book is your picture on the day that Richard Nixon resigned, which is not the famous goodbye, waving goodbye from the top of the stairs up into his helicopter, but it was after he was gone.
The kind of picture that ran in those days was really more, the picture of
illustrative.
Nixon with Nixon in the picture doing his, his hand wave, before the helicopter door closes. I mean, so my picture, of course, so it was sort of after the fact, and everyone is sort of leaving, and I turned around and I saw the three soldiers rolling up the carpet. And I kept shooting. And then the funny story about that, of course, is Hunter, who I was working on that story with.
Hunter Thompson,
right, never made the deadline. And so they had all these pages in Rolling Stone they were leaving open, before they went to press. And so they ended up blowing up my pictures big, and I had like an 8-page photo spread. So it was one of my first big photo spreads in Rolling Stone quite by accident. Yeah.
You shoot and include in the book some pictures of bunch of pictures of your family, of your mother, your father, one of your beautiful daughters. You shot Susan Sontag up until the end of her life. Do you ever feel enough with the photography? I just want to be here in this moment and not be shooting my family.
With my children, I especially since Photographer's Life, because I think it was really, I didn't quite know what I was doing when I published all that work on my family and my father and Susan. I felt like I had to at the time. I was sort of driven. I was sort of
it had that feel of a kind of
compulsive. It just had to come. It was a moment of grief, and I look at it now and I go, oh my gosh, I actually
you know, I know I'll never do that again. I'll never put my family in that position. But it was almost like I had some kind of rite of passage with that book in a certain way. I don't feel the need, the obsessiveness that I had with having to photograph everything. And in fact, I give my nannies cameras for Christmas, hoping they'll take pictures. Because when I'm with my kids,
I subcontract.
I want to be with my kids. I find myself really wanting to be with my kids now.
And you have a wonderful story about one of them. She forced to smile for the camera, and it sort of was heartbreaking to you.
Growing up, my mom always made us, you know, smile in pictures, and all moms want to see their kids happy, and so, you know, we had to smile, you know, and there were times when our family, you know, wasn't necessarily going through the best times, and we're all smiling, you know, my mom smiled in every single picture, and so it became a false thing to me. So I never like to ask people to smile in pictures, and I do cite that moment where Sarah just kind of fake smiled to me, and it was painful. Like, you know, I wanted to be real as much as possible.
When you were young, your father was in the Air Force, mm-hmm. and so you grew up everywhere. You one of these military brats moving yeah. around all the time. Did that experience shape what you do? How,
you know, we didn't have any money, and my father, you know, we had very little money, and we used to travel to all these, you know, when we moved every couple of years by car. So we've been in and out of several states. Probably the first camera was looking out the window of that car, yeah.
But you didn't get a camera, a serious camera, until you were 18, 19 years old.
No, I was going to school at the Art Institute. And I wasn't a very good painter. And being young, I was looking for something more social. And the photo department was a very cool place to be. And photography literally socialized me. You could have the camera and you could go out and it's a corny thing to say, but it's true. It was like a little friend, and you had this camera and you had a purpose.
Tell me about the moment when you started taking pictures and realized, okay, this is the path.
There was a summer workshop, and we worked every single day. You know, you went out, shot, and came back and put the pictures up on the wall. There was a photograph that came out of that of it was shooting through a car door window out into a beach, and it was like one of the first pictures where I thought it was good, and I thought I could do this. Yeah, it was.
That's interesting, given that your experience as a child was looking out car door windows.
Yeah,
traveling around the country. Annie Leibovitz, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kurt. It's good to see you.
You too.
You can see some pictures from Annie Leibovitz's book, At Work, at studio360.org. She'll be honored by the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe next spring.